Becky Linford has a PhD in history from Georgetown University, where she currently teaches courses. And she is married to Kirk Linford, his mother of two delightful children who lives in Herndon, Virginia. And she wants to know that if you have a job that pays more than teaching, please contact her. So I introduce Becky Linford.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks ever so much.
Nation, we were blessed last year at the October 2007 General Conference of the Church to hear the inaugural address of our new General Relief Society president, Sister Julie B. Beck. In it, she instructed us on how we as women could become mothers who know. I immediately went to work to implement each and every piece of counsel from that inspired talk, and I'm happy to report to you that I am now the most perfect mother who knows in the universe. After I became the most perfect mother who knows, I wondered what other of my numerous roles I could become the most perfect in the universe at. As I counseled with my priesthood magnifying presided co-equal patriarch in our home, Kirk, he directed me to learn how to become a wife who knows. While I was thrilled to be given this assignment, I was also troubled. Where could I find reliable, inspired information on how to become a wife who knows? After much ponderous meditation and difficult thinking, I was inspired to go online and Google Goodly Wife, whereunto I learned many plain and precious truths of perfect wifery. I was directed to a wonderful tract, Fascinating Womanhood. I see by a show of hands how many of you have actually read Fascinating Womanhood. Wow! Scary.
Oh, don't see me.
Then delight with me as we find gems of truth in Fascinating Womanhood on how to become a perfect wife. I must add a disclaimer here. Even though some of us women are not given the responsibility of bearing husbands and children in mortality, the values and attributes that are still required to develop will rise with them when they finally die. Because eternity is much, much longer than mortality. So, single, barren women out there, stop your complaining. You're going to be rewarded just like the rest of us. I also learned in my reading that it's okay to equate womanhood with wifery and mothering. To be a woman is to be a wife, to be a mother. It's all synonymous. It's all the same. So, no problem. Number one, wives who know, get married. All right, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Yes. All righty. Wives who know, get married. Next, wives who know, put their husbands first. Now, this is very, very important because we learned how to be the perfect mother, and now we need to learn how to be the perfect wife. And we're never going to do that if we are not giving our all to our husbands. I know that in the world that the value of marriage is not the same as it used to be, and that if Johnny Lingo were to marry Mahana today, whereas she used to be worth 8 cows, due to today's society and economy, she's now decreased to 4.5 cows. It's a sad thing. See, love is not reserved just for the young, nor the beautiful, the single. It is reserved for those who arouse it in a man. If a man doesn't loved with heart and soul, it is entirely the wife's fault. The role of woman, when played correctly, is fulfilling, fascinating, and full of intrigue. Number three, wives who know honor their pledge to remain thin, obedient, submissive, and obedient. I've seen wives in some of the poorest places in Tooele where they dress in their Sunday best. They know that a fresh appearance is essential to womanly beauty. The woman who appears wilted or drab is not attractive. There must be in the entire appearance and manner of woman a fresh, clean overall effect. A wife should be fresh and joyous as the lark. These are all direct quotes, by the way. I'm not making this up. Tooele, I have it. Now, how do we become fresh? We are fresh when we correct our internal disorders. We drink plenty of water, we breathe, and we eat properly. We must also clean the teeth, the hair, the nails, the feet, and the entire body for the effect of freshness. For clothing, wives should wear such fresh things as starched collars, flowers, real or artificial, clean, shining ribbons, polished shoes, and clean, well-pressed clothes. Remember, certain materials and colors appear fresh, while others are drab. Clean stripes, polka dots, ginghams, daisy designs, and animated prints suggest freshness. Now, wives who know are nurturers. Another word for nurturing is homemaking. In this filthy world ruled by Satan, many women are working outside the home, thus preventing them from becoming the best homemaker in the world. Dangers arise when women work outside the home.
I would like to read to you from page 53.
You see how much I love this book. You can't make this stuff up. Let's see. Working women tend to lose their womanliness. This depends, of course, on the type of work they do. Although some jobs are quite feminine, secretarial, clerical, fast food sales, nursing, and school teaching are just a few. But if a woman works and supports herself and is able to make it in the world without masculine assistance, she develops independence and ability. Which means a loss of femininity. Women should not work in the more masculine jobs, such as science, industry, politics, engineering, or managerial positions, because she would then have to develop such masculine skills as leadership, efficiency, and drive. When this occurs, femininity diminishes. And I have a real testimony about that. So I was documented now, but see you later. Instead, we should be at home and making sure that everyone is happy and eager to be there. Wives who know strive to become perfect domestic goddesses. As such, she needs to develop the proper attitude towards drudgery. Oh my gosh, you can't make this stuff up. Let's see. Wives who know that their husbands are the most important thing in the world, that they are ready at a moment's notice to comb their husband's hair to perfection, to see that they wear white shirts and ties and carry Franklin planners in the manner of future general authorities. These wives know the importance of rising in the corporate church, like unto Thomas Monson, bishop at 22, etc. So if you're a wife who knows, you are going to be pushing for your man to rise in the corporate church. Let's see. Now, in the rare instance that you need to give your husband an opinion about anything or correct him, it's never happened with me. But for heaven's sakes, be feminine when you have to do that. First, don't appear to know more about his business than he does, even if you do. Next, get rid of that self-righteous attitude. Next, look for his better side. And above all, don't use other men as an example. Wives who know are flatterers and ego boosters and know how to inspire adoration from their man. See, wives who know are also leaders, sort of, with their husbands, of course. The apostle, oh, wait a minute. Here we have often heard the statement that marriage is a partnership. But what kind of a partnership? It is not an equal partnership, for man's role is to be guide, protector, and provider, whereas woman's is loving wife, mother, and homemaker. Man and woman are not partners in leadership, nor motherhood, and nor homemaking. Isn't that good to know? And as long as the woman remains under his roof, she must honor her husband's authority to rule. Now, when a woman rules, it robs her of presence of mind to do her homemaking tasks well. It is trying on a woman's emotions to assume that leadership role. She's weighted down with responsibility, thoughts, and worries. She was not designed to carry these things, which make her life difficult. Women are fountains of wisdom and have insight or intuition that is unique with their sex. Also, I would like for you to have a feminine perspective. Act on those feminine impulses. And remember, in giving advice, you always make your husband feel superior in his role as leader. You never want him to think that you might know more than he does about anything. Wives who really know realize that she is subservient. She leads by supporting him and admiring his manly qualities of manly courage, and I really am getting hot here, leadership ability, sexual capacities, devotion to a cause. So true, I have no devotion to anything. Mental capacity, achievement, success, and excellence. These are things that men strive for because they make him feel like a real man. Sometimes it's difficult to recognize the good qualities in our men. So here are some examples of how he displays qualities that we might not look at as positive. We might want to notice his strength while he mows the lawn, or moves heavy objects, while he opens tight jar lids, or turns screws, or wields a hammer. I know I get a buzz whenever I see that hammer. You can also admire the way he rules over you and your children. His beard or his mustache, unless you have one too. His skill in repairing a motor, his body structure, his sex response. I've got to stop reading now. The masculine clothes he wears, his deep-pitched voice, or his heavy jaw and large shoulders. If you can't see the obvious good, then that's your fault, because all men are superior and have these qualities, and it just takes time for you to learn how to recognize these things in him. Spend less time thinking about you, your affairs, and your problems, and more in thinking about him. Don't be so self-centered or self-absorbed in raising your children or doing household chores. It is that selfishness that causes a man to turn to a more appreciative woman. So, this is your fault. If he strays, that is your responsibility. John Edwards. Something like cancer, I don't know. still hear him talk. Be sure to see how he glories in his skill and knowledge. Don't really listen so much to what he's saying, but see what a genuine man he is, how absorbed he is, how he's mastered the intricate details. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you can't comprehend everything that he's talking about. He loves being listened to. And if he thinks he's superior and able to teach you something, or at least you appreciate his knowledge, then so much the better. A woman need not be well educated or possess intelligence to follow a clever man's discourse.
Wow, what a relief.
In his pleasure at having himself admired, the man seldom even notices that his conversation is not understood. In fact, if he deliberately talks over your head, he's only doing it to arouse your admiration. I'm not making this up. Wives who know are teachers. They can teach their men to be truly manly. If you can't find many manly qualities, just have faith. They are there. And it's your responsibility and blessing to find that. Many a girl has transformed a man from an apparently stupid, weak, lazy, cowardly, unrighteous man into a determined, energetic, true, and noble one. Let's see. Most importantly, wives teach husbands about how feminine their wives are. And this is page 260. This is a guide for teaching us to be feminine. And how to become more feminine is done in the following way. Number one, don't use your hands in a stiff, efficient, firm, or strong manner. Number two, don't walk with a heavy gait, long steps, round shoulders, or slanting forward. Number three, avoid the following qualities in your voice: loudness, firmness, efficiency, boldness, oversoftness or timidity, dullness, flat tone, mumbling, monotonous, sing-song. Number four, don't laugh loudly or in a vulgar manner. Number five, don't use facial expressions that are hard, harsh, bitter, or unyielding. Six, don't indulge in conversation that is harsh, critical, impatient, crude, vulgar, or unrefined. Seven, don't slap anyone on the back. Eight, don't whistle. Nine, don't yell. 10, don't roar at jokes. 11, don't gulp your food or eat noisily. Let's see. And last, don't sit with your legs apart or with one leg horizontal across the other. Very unfeminine. And lastly, do learn how to coo, purr, and laugh correctly. I don't know if I can get through. Alrighty. Wives who know talk less. They know that the last thing their husband wants to hear after a grueling day at work is a request for a favor or, heaven forbid, a complaint. Page 80 says, it is most important that you know how to treat a man when he arrives home. It would be good practice if you train your children to kiss their father upon arrival and then lead him by the hand into the bedroom. Have him lie down, take off his shoes, and make him comfortable. Play relaxing music and speak with a soothing tone in your voice. And for God's sake, don't talk about anything important. Allow him this peace for just a little bit of time before you expose him to the children. Now, it's one of woman's greatest mistakes that she tries to help men solve their problems, to offer suggestions or to rescue him or to lift his burdens. These mistakes are all wrong because they hurt his superior pride. You build him up by approval, hope, and admiration. And whatever you do, don't let his gloom rub off on you. Now, I'd also like to turn my attention to the younger sisters in the congregation. I know that when I was at Beehive, I would have so much appreciated knowing how to become a woman who knows, a wife who knows, what kind of attributes that men really wanted in me as a woman and as a potential wife, since they are all equal. And so I have turned next. Let's see. To Fascinating Girl. And has anyone read this? This is even worse than the other one. I mean better, more inspired.
Oh, well.
First off, a girl should learn how to become attractive to men. And first off, you have to meet men. You have to be where men are. And what is the best place? Do any of you have any ideas on where the best congregation of men might be?
Sporting events.
What was that?
Sporting events.
Sporting events, very good. Anything else?
Priesthood meeting.
Priesthood meeting, ward activities, very good. Well, those are wrong. Yes, Maxine.
Crown burger at lunchtime.
Very good. Well, our inspired sister Andelyn says that we should go to college to meet the most amount of men. And then we should go to all sorts of activities. We should go to lectures. We should go to games, sports activities. And it doesn't matter if you really are not interested in those things, because there's so many men there. And another, probably the best way to meet men is to get to know their family. You meet their sisters, and then you wait for an invitation to come to the sister's house, and then you get to meet the brother, and maybe he's got some friends, and cousins maybe, or uncles, which I found really creepy. Because girls know guys, and so they are going to be the biggest entree, they're your biggest help in finding that one particular man. Now, in this book, we are taught that the greatest accomplishment any girl can strive for is marriage. The best thing she can do with her life is to put all of her energies not into just finding the right man, but becoming attractive to men. So good. Let's see. So we've found out where to go to meet men. Let me see. Contribution a woman can make to society is to marry and to successfully fill her role as a wonderful wife, mother, and homemaker. There is no greater aim in life than this. That's it. Okay. Now, above all, do not be better than the man at something that he's really trying to achieve something in. Say he's in law school, for heaven's sakes, don't go to law school. That's very unfeminine to begin with. But if you happen to be in law school, please don't excel him or let him see you excel at that, because this is a serious threat. If women marry men who can outdo them, either in the field of acting or in any other occupation, then things are in their rightful place. But if men simply cannot meet the competition of their wife's acclaim, it is a serious threat to the male ego and can make him very uncomfortable and unhappy. Next, there are some common mistakes that women make. So girls, we have set up a really good educational way to help you learn to not make crucial mistakes with men. Women of today have made the mistakes of becoming independent, capable, efficient, and able to, quote, kill their own snakes, unquote. We see men lifting heavy objects, repairing automobiles, changing tires. Oh, I'm getting hot just thinking of this. Driving heavy equipment, fixing a roof, doing carpentry, and many other masculine tasks. We see women competing with men in a working world, or in masculine sports or games. It is difficult to describe how seriously women rob men of their masculinity by becoming independent. The woman also loses ground by becoming capable and intelligent. Do not make the mistake of trying to be better than he is in anything. And do not take on the capable and independent air of being able to kill your own snakes. She is really obsessed with snakes. Coincidence? I think not. If you want success in your associations with men, therefore, dispense with any thought of a career. Your future happiness will not depend upon receiving money or acclaim, but your successful relationships with men, and eventually marriage. These are the only things that count in the life of a woman. Okie dokie. Now, remember, we silly women, we're still just human, and sometimes we make mistakes like, we do such things like burning food, spending money foolishly, breaking expensive objects, losing things, or being late for appointments. Poor, silly, inferior us. A man wants a girl who knows more about the feminine arts than he does. He doesn't appreciate it. But that's okay. He does not appreciate it if she asks him questions such as, "What would you like to eat?" Or, "What kind of tomato should I buy?" Or, "Which fabric is better?" He may want to give suggestions generally about your appearance or your cooking, but he does not want to provide the answers to all of these women's problems. Next. Wives who know enjoy domestic life. We should enjoy tasks such as doing the dishes, scrubbing floors. We should never make negative remarks about these tasks, especially in the presence of men, lest we lower their estimation of us as real women. I remember hearing a man say that the main reason he didn't pursue a certain girl any further was that she had made some comment about dreading to do the dishes. Also, while in her home, her brother had asked her to bring him a glass of milk, and she had refused. She told him to do it himself. Women should delight in waiting on men. It is part of their calling as women. Really, my that's it. Okay. Cooking. Girls should learn how to cook because men want good food that's well prepared, and they want it on time. It is important to learn a number of dishes and menus that men like. And they tend to like things like beef stew, roast beef and potatoes, fried chicken and biscuits, salad and apple pie with ice cream. They do not tend to like casseroles, weenies, cold cuts, or prepared foods. Now, occasionally you will see a large woman with a small man. And you think, what on earth? Why are they together? You know, what does he see in her? And we have learned from Sister Andelin that obviously, this woman has given him the impression of smallness. And she has taught us how to create that impression of smallness by becoming dainty and by speaking softly, by being afraid of such things as snakes. Snakes, bugs, mice, and traffic. So, that one really came in handy for me. I was worried I was going to have to marry a little pipsqueak kind of guy. But my husband, fortunately, is taller than I am, so I don't have the same onus of developing that impression of smallness that some of you obviously do. Alrighty. One last thing. Some girls may think they can cover their defects of disorderly bedrooms, messy closets, or drawers, since men do not see them. But men somehow have a very good way of detecting these faults. They can either detect outer signs, or they may have indulged in men's gossip sessions in which the girls' roommates have passed on information. And again, that's the women's fault. That's the wife's fault. In closing, I would just like to urge all of you kids out there and adult women to try to really become a wife who knows, like unto me, because I do know, and now I am the most perfect wife in the universe. And I know if I can do it, that maybe you can too. Thank you.
For attending this smart-ass session. I just wanted to let you know that copies of the session will be available for sale in the lobby shortly thereafter.
Thank you. You can leave me here too, but I'm going to keep going. This is the best part, okay? Sorry you had to wade through that. This is Church Bloopers, what I have called. I've been collecting tacky testimonies for a long time, and lo and behold, now that we have the blogger knackle, there's tons and tons of instances of hideous testimonies, as well as funny things that happen at church. And you've all heard them, and I want you to start thinking of the most outrageous things that you have witnessed at church, and then see me later, okay? First one, I call it lost in translation. When I was a missionary in Italy, I was very excited to give my first talk because my teacher from the LTM was going to be there. And so I was going to get to show off about my wonderful language skills. I was really excited when he was there. I decided to base my talk on one of President Kimball's talks about clean up your houses, clean up your yards, put everything in order. And I was, you know, a lot of people drive down the street and they throw garbage out the window, and don't do that. That's very bad. So I was up giving my talk, and in effect, I said, please don't throw your underpants out the window. There's another one in the first discussion. It goes, Mr. Brown, many people, we live in a world of trouble and turmoil. Many people are confused and discouraged and seeking a better life. I, however, said, many people are confused and farting. And seeking a better life. Instant flaws. Here's another good one. This woman was weird. This happened in a Relief Society in-service meeting at BYU in the 80s. This gal was giving a lesson on using different teaching methods. The first one, which is good, you know, to try to keep the interest up, be varied, and maybe you can reach everybody with at least one of these ways. So she decided to use examples from the scriptures. The first one was, when Father Lehi was out wandering around in the desert, got lost, how did he find his way that he should go? Leahona. Good Very good. And she likened that to using charts and maps. Okay, so we can use maps and charts in our lessons. So when Moses climbed Mount Sinai, how did the Lord appear to him? Burning bush, good. And how can we use something similar to that in our lessons? Special effects. Now, when Joseph Smith went into the grove to ask which of all the churches he should join, what happened? The first vision, the Father and the Son appeared. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, this is good, finally, you know, answer to prayer, personal revelation. No, the equivalent for her was guest speakers. Okay. Live and from the Secret Grove, way right here. Now, did you all see both halves of the interview that Tom Brokaw did with President Hinckley for the Olympics? Yeah? Okay, the first half was brilliant. It was lovely. And the second half, they only showed on MSNBC, and thank goodness. One of the questions Tom Brokaw asked President Hinckley was, how do you respond to the charge that by some Christian churches that Mormons don't worship Christ, that they place more emphasis on Joseph Smith than modern-day prophets? And President Hinckley began with a beautiful testimony of the Savior, how the Savior was the true Son of God who had provided salvation, and it was only through Jesus Smith that we would be baptized. Describes a youth meeting of when they had the youth do the sacrament meeting, and each kid was to take one or two of the articles of faith. And there was a little 12-year-old girl who spoke on article faith number 10 about taking the gospel to all the earth. And, you know, all the parents knew that their kids were going to be performing, and they knew their kids were nervous, and so all the parents were pretty much seated in the same place. And this little girl said, as members of the church, we are charged with taking the gospel to all the earth, Jews and Gentiles. For a split second, Brian said, everybody's thinking, did I just hear what I think I heard? You know, no one's moving. Little darling went on with her talk, saying, cited Isaiah 49, and the genitals shall nurse Israel to be set up as an example. So at that point, Brian says, everyone, oh, she said it. And he realized at that time he was sitting right in front of the girl's parents. Okay, so all of this is happening in a split second. So he's going, oh my God. I can't laugh. I can't be seen to laugh. If I start to laugh, I'm going to just come and glue. And he says, I can't look at my wife because I know she's going to laugh too. And little gal just went right on. DNC 124. God will visit and soften the heart of the genitals. And the genitals shall be exalted to the lifting up of Zion. So this time, stabbing himself in the leg. Oh, make it end. Look at the bishop's bloody. Help that girl get her off. The bishop was down. Oh. And finally, she concluded her talk by saying, and in that day, the genitals shall come together in the tops of the mountains and spread their message over the whole earth. Good one, huh? nobody in the ward ever said anything to her about it. And the girl had an older sister, and the mom apparently swore all of those children to keep their big mouths shut and don't ever let her know what a mistake she'd made. But, you know, you can only last so long with evidence and good stuff like that. And so in a fit of passion a few years afterwards, the younger sister, the girl who had given the talk, was annoying her older sister. And so the sister used the genitals instead of Gentile in the sacrament meeting. And apparently, she's left the church now. here are some other things. Do I need to go? No, seriously, Dean.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next session is supposed to begin now.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Wrapped up in genitals. I say this in the name of Jesus' name.